The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots to get to on today's program. Coming up later on in the show, we're going to talk more about the millennials' love for socialism. I've referred a time or two to Joel Hilliker's piece, his Trumpet brief from last week, on the subject of American greatness and what so many young people think about America's past and what they're being taught in the university, and even before they get to university. That, as I say, we'll get into that more later on in the show. We'll also, if we have time, I found that the first segment just kept getting bigger and bigger as I was preparing, so we may have to push more of the final segment off until tomorrow. But quite a few stories over the last several days about just the decline of interest in reading, especially among young people. And of course, that's a very dangerous trend. Education, I mean, what are we if we're not an educated people? Just look at the ignorance already around our society and how ill-informed so many people are in survey after survey after survey, or even in some of these, as I've said before, some of these interviewers that you see out on the street from time to time. So we've been encouraging you. We've been encouraging you to encourage your young people, your children, to develop a love, an interest in reading, this infinite source of pleasure. As I say, if I don't get enough time on today's show, we'll let it push back into tomorrow's program or perhaps the next couple of shows. But first, the news. Yesterday, big trade deal between the United States and Mexico, both nations reworking its trade agreement, basically doing away with NAFTA, making it more beneficial to U.S. manufacturers, to U.S. Farmers, strengthening protections for U.S. copyright holders. So President Trump's excited about this. This is something that he campaigned on over and again. The U.S. stock market loved the deal yesterday. Shares for all kinds of companies skyrocketed, or certainly inched upward, I guess, depending on how you look at it. But it's supposed to benefit manufacturers and farmers, as I said a moment ago. And a lot of people are excited about it. And now they're working to try to include Canada in the deal. So you have to hand it to this administration's, or to the president, that you have to give him credit for following through on some of these trade promises that he's made. It's hard to fault him on the unfair trade practices all around the world that really work against the United States. Now, we know from Ezekiel 4 and 5 that in the end, it's not going to work. I mean, when God's not behind it, there may be some short-term gain there, and we're in the midst of a temporary resurgence, which is amazing when you consider how many people, as I said yesterday, when you consider how many different enemies this administration has coming from so many different angles, the deep state, the Democrats, the mainstream media, and on it goes. There's this story that broke last night about Lanny Davis lying, again, trying to trump up this story to give it voice from about a month ago, I think that it was, that Michael Cohen supposedly had something on President Trump. Of course, you know the news from last week we discussed with you about how the after the plea bargain, the Lanny Davis was out there. He's the old Clinton crony. He was out there saying this is really bad for Trump, President Trump. He didn't really have much of anything to say about his client, Michael Cohen. He was just broadcasting the fact that this is really going to hurt Donald Trump. Well, about a month ago, CNN runs this story saying that Michael Cohen evidently was going to claim that President Trump knew in advance about this 2016 Trump Tower meeting between Don Jr. and the Russians. I don't want to get caught up into too many of the details here, but it does expose more lies and deceit. And the conspiracy to bring down a sitting president of the United States, and it reveals collusion between the Clinton camp and the major media. And so here is this tip, this anonymous source that contributes to this CNN story saying that, well, never mind what Michael Cohen has testified before, how that the president knew nothing about this meeting. Now we come to find out, based on an anonymous source, that evidently President Trump did know about the meeting, and that Michael Cohen was prepared to help the Mueller investigation, or to testify to that fact, or to change his testimony. Well, CNN runs with this article, and as is often the case, all these other news outlets, they run with the story as well. And they're contacting Lanny Davis to try to confirm the report. Well, let me just skip over to the Daily Wire. I think I had to read this a couple of times. I had a few email exchanges with Sam this morning just to try to understand the web of lies here. From the Daily Wire, it says, Michael Cohen's lawyer admitted on Monday, so this was yesterday, that he was the anonymous source for a widely criticized CNN report that claimed Cohen was willing to tell special counsel Robert Mueller that President Donald Trump knew in advance about the Trump Tower meeting in which Russians were expected to offer his campaign dirt on Hillary Clinton. So now see if you can follow these details. It says Cohen's lawyer, Lanny Davis, told CNN's Anderson Cooper last week that Cohen does not have any information that Trump knew about the meeting in advance, saying, I think the reporting of the story, that's speaking of the CNN report from a month ago, I think the reporting of the story got mixed up in the course of a criminal investigation. We were not the source of the story. However, Davis told BuzzFeed News on Monday, this would be yesterday, that he was the source for CNN's June 26th report, which directly contradicts what he told Cooper. So there's the lie that he told Cooper last week. Then there's the fact that he was this anonymous source telling the lie that Cohen had the dirt on President Trump, when in fact he didn't. Daily Wire says, however, Davis admitting that he was the source for the report, which he has since stated was not true. So he's admitting he was the source for the report, and he's also admitting that the report was not true. So he told a lie to CNN. It gets worse. It says, and this is quoting from the BuzzFeed report yesterday, the original CNN story broadcast during Chris Cuomo's primetime show and written by Jim Sciutto, Marshall Cohen, and Watergate reporting legend Carl Bernstein, even the legend was in on this report. This original report said that Davis had declined to comment his involvement in the story on so-called background has not been previously reported. So those three journalists, the tip that they get is from an anonymous tip from Lanny Davis that Cohen had this dirt. And then in the same story, they reach out to Lanny Davis for comment, and he doesn't have a comment. Daily Wire says, CNN used Davis as the anonymous source for their report and then claimed that they reached out to him for comment, stating that he declined to comment. So it's like double the deception. You've got all of the deception from the Clinton crony, Lanny Davis, and then you've got CNN, who's well in on it. They're in collusion with the Clinton camp, because it's all about bringing down the president of the United States, remember? And so CNN's quoting Lanny Davis, who's the anonymous tip, and then they say, oh, and also we reached out to Lanny Davis, and he had no comment. a total setup. Trying to conceal the fact that Lanny Davis, he certainly wouldn't be the anonymous source. He was. Now, as I say, it gets worse, because then you have Lanny Davis going out there, and you saw some of this last week and even before last week. Lanny Davis was out there saying, hey, Michael Cohen, he knows some dirt on President Trump. And you know how I know this? Well, because of this CNN report. The CNN report that he was the source of and that he has since admitted was bogus. It says here at the Daily Wire, things just went from bad to worse for CNN with this BuzzFeed news piece. According to Newsbusters' editor, CNN's decision, it quotes Newsbusters, CNN's decision to have Davis serve as their source and then allow him to claim on the record that he was declining comment was not only deceptive, but straight up lying to their readers and viewers. It's a textbook example of why anonymous sourcing runs into problems. And you know what it says at the end of this report? After all of this, I guess it was the Washington Post and the Daily Post in New York that basically blew the whistle. That was one gray area. I couldn't quite figure out how that or why Lanny Davis is fessing up to all of this now. But I guess those other sources kind of blew the whistle on him, saying, well, you're the anonymous source. And so now Lanny Davis comes forward and says, yeah, I misspoke. CNN, however, stands by its report from July 27th. The report that quoted Lanny Davis anonymously and then said it reached out to Lanny Davis and he didn't have a comment. They stand by that report a month after. Even after the BuzzFeed revelation, even after the Washington Post and the New York Post come forward, revealing the fact that he's the anonymous source. Daily Wire says, in addition to Davis backtracking, Michael Cohen testified twice to Congress that he personally did not know about the meeting in advance. This contradicts CNN's claim that Cohen was present when Trump learned the Trump Tower meeting was set to occur. So lies on top of lies on top of lies. And yet, when has there ever been an administration accused of lying as much as this one? Listen to what CNN was saying just Sunday, 2 days ago, clip three.
By now, we all know Trump lies in tweets. He spreads false information at rallies. And he spins and misleads when he sits down for friendly interviews on Fox and Friends. At this point, he's said so many untrue statements, you might not remember this campaign promise made by then-candidate Trump.
In this journey, I will never lie to you.
Is it time for newsrooms to think of new ways to convey Trump's lack of credibility? Look, I know newsrooms have been grappling with how to fact-check Trump in real time. This has been a topic for a couple of years now. Sometimes we use the chyrons, the banners on the bottom of your screen to correct misinformation that Trump is spreading. Sometimes we try to make a truth sandwich where we tell the facts, then we show his falsehood, then we tell you the facts again. But look, the volume and the frequency of all of the misinformation has made it hard to keep up and hard to fact check every falsehood. Like it says there. There are so many lies, so little time.
That's Brian Stelter from his program on Sunday. They just can't keep up with the president's lies. Well, they ought to start with, if they're going to print the number of lies on a running meter below, on the screen below, they ought to start with their own. They haven't even come forward about the July 27th report to say that they got it wrong. Even Lanny Davis has admitted it. Well, to some degree. It wasn't a lie, you see. He misspoke. He just misspoke. It was confusing. It wasn't the most straightforward story in the world. That's the way that it's presented from that side. And that's the way it was presented for the 8 years of the Obama administration. Anytime there was a lie, it was a misstatement or not the complete truth. Now, I mean, enemy number one's in the White House. So there's so many lies, you can't keep up with it. The Washington Post is keeping a running tally of something like 5,000, 4,000 or 5,000 lies in something like 500 days So it's 8-9 lies a day, they say. And yet, look at the web of deception, the deceit, the collusion, the attacks, the hoaxes, the investigations, the arrests, the plea bargains, the changing stories. Michael Cohen testified twice that President Trump knew nothing about the meeting between Don Jr. and the Russians. And all that we heard when he flipped was that he had some insider information. He knew. President Trump actually knew. And Mr. Cohen was going to testify to that fact. And Lanny Davis was out there making the rounds on cable news saying that this was coming out. This is really bad for Trump. I wonder how much Cohen's going to be in the news now because his credibility is pretty much destroyed. To say nothing of Lanny Davis's. Yet the attacks will continue, like I said yesterday. It's nonstop. Today, Bruce Ohr is testifying in a closed-door session. He was up there, I think, the fourth in command at the Justice Department. Another one pretty high up. And he's going to be grilled about his relationship with the ex-British spy, Christopher Steele, the one who authored the salacious Trump dossier. With all of that gossip, with all of those lies on top of lies, those were the lies that were used to get the FISA warrants. Not once, not twice, four times. They lied to get the warrant. They lied about wiretapping. They lied about informants. They lied about who was being investigated. Well, here comes Bruce Ohr and the New York Times. Right on cue. It's got a big puff piece in the newspaper today saying how great he is, how much of a patriot he is, how honest he is, how hardworking he is, and how that the New York Times just can't understand why President Trump would target Bruce Ohr. It's Bruce Ohr who's the target, says the New York Times. Kimberly Strassel, she said Mr. Ohr was until last year Associate Deputy Attorney General. He began feeding information to the FBI from dossier author Christopher Steele in late 2016. Now, if you remember, Christopher Steele was trying to get the traction going with the FBI on this dossier before the election in November, and then the FBI finally had to fire him because then he was going off to media sources. He couldn't get the FBI to pay close enough attention or to run with it the way that he wanted them to. And so he started to leak it to news agencies, news sources. And the FBI concluded that this is not a reliable source. So they fired him. And yet he kept working with Bruce Ohr over at the DOJ. And Bruce Ohr kept feeding this information from Christopher Steele to the FBI. So it continued. It continued. All of this, these are pages right out of the Ben Rhodes echo chamber playbook. Lanny Davis citing himself, the anonymous source in a CNN story, and then telling CNN and MSNBC and these other news agencies. Well, I mean, according to CNN, Michael Cohen knows that the president knew about this. He was citing himself. And it's all a big lie, as we now know. Well, here is Bruce Ohr. He continues with this relationship. And then, of course, his wife worked with, who was it? Glenn Simpson, I think it was, the outfit that was behind or that helped with the funding. I forget all of the connections. It's hard to keep track of. We need a running tab of who's connected to who and how many lies there are. Kimberly Strassel says, all the while, well, let me back up here. She might actually get to some of the details here. Christopher Steele, he also collected dirt from Glenn Simpson, co-founder of Fusion GPS, the opposition research firm that worked for Hillary Clinton's campaign and employed Mr. Steele. Altogether, the FBI pumped Mr. Orr for information at least a dozen times, debriefs that remain in classified 302 forms. So they cut off contact with Mr. Steele, but they continue to get information from Bruce Orr over at the DOJ. Strassel says, all the while, Mr. Orr failed to disclose on financial forms that his wife, Nellie, worked alongside Mr. Steele in 2016, getting paid by Mr. Simpson for anti-Trump research. The Justice Department has now turned over Orr documents to Congress that show how deeply tied up he was with the Clinton crew, with dozens of emails, calls, meetings, and notes that describe his interactions and what he collected. And the New York Times says he's the target. Why would Mr. Trump target Bruce Orr? The New York Times asked today. It says Mr. Orr's conduct is itself deeply troubling. He was acting as a witness via FBI interviews in a case being overseen by a Justice Department in which he held a very senior position. You talk about the echo chamber. Listen to that again. He was acting as a witness via FBI interviews in a case being overseen by a Justice Department in which he held a very senior position. I mean, this is mind-boggling. This is astounding. This is not something that was going on. It's still going on. These investigations are still ongoing. You have people like Lanny Davis still feeding CNN with lies to try to take down Donald Trump. And remarkably, the Trump train, as some call it, just keeps chugging along. Making another trade deal yesterday with Mexico. Stock market setting records. The resurgence, it continues. You know, Bruce Orr, he wrote, remember Hillary was supposed to win, and then all this that we're finding out, it never would have been uncovered. It was in a conversation between Steele and Orr where Steele said that he was desperate. He was desperate that Donald Trump not get elected. He was passionate about him not being president. These are the words he used. And then Bruce Orr wrote to Christopher Steele. He said that he was very concerned about Jim Comey being fired last year because he was afraid they were going to be exposed. He was afraid of being exposed. What did he mean by that? Why would he be worried about being exposed? Now that Donald Trump was in office and Jim Comey had been fired, well, he was afraid of what's happening right now, today. And these documents that have been uncovered. And not without a fight, by the way. Congress has had to fight tooth and nail for every document to learn about what was happening in 2016, in 2017, and what continues even to today. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. When we come back, we'll get into some other news items that are important from a prophetic standpoint. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
to America's founding fathers, character meant everything to the success of the nation and its leadership. The Constitution was based upon the fundamental principles of religion and morality. These were the primary building blocks of the American nation. George Washington said, "The foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality." Character was no minor issue to America's first president. He regarded it as the basis of national policy. Where did the founding fathers develop these ideas? Many of these principles stemmed from the Holy Scriptures. The Bible provided early Americans with the instruction and guidance of how to properly govern one's life. These beliefs helped build a nation of strong families and upright leaders. Today, America has dismissed the Bible as the foundation of developing righteous character. Men now leave it to themselves to determine right from wrong. Where has the rejection of biblically based principles led this nation? There is a cause for these effects. To understand the course of events that have led this nation to its current state, visit thetrumpet.com and click on the Literature tab to request our free booklet, Character in Crisis.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Well, just to follow up on what we discussed with you yesterday about this ever-growing divide between the United States and Germany, there's a story today in Deutsche Welle, or maybe it was just yesterday, where Germany is leading the way to make a change on the European payment system, the SWIFT system, it's called. And essentially, it's an attempt here to challenge the United States' control over the world's financial system. Quoting the German foreign minister here, this is Deutsche Welle, it says, "We must increase Germany's autonomy and sovereignty in trade, economic, and financial policies." That's from German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas. SWIFT stands for the Society for Worldwide Interbank Financial Telecommunication. So this planned European system, this is to be free from U.S. influence. And we're going to start seeing this all over the world. We've talked about this before with respect to China and Japan and some of these nations that hold so much U.S. debt. We know where this is leading. And of course, we're seeing the standoff currently between the U.S. and Europe and Germany, of course, over the trade policies, the tariffs and such. And then yesterday I talked about the sanctions on Iran and the position Germany has taken with respect to Turkey. I mean, you see these two lovers, as we see in Ezekiel 23, you see these two steadily pulling away from each other, and that too is prophesied. I mean, they were prophesied to be lovers for quite some time, but then there's a betrayal. There's a betrayal that's prophesied, and that's to happen right before the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. Study that prophecy in Ezekiel 23. It's discussed in my father's booklet on Ezekiel. And you can understand, even though the names, as he said recently, they don't just roll off the tongue, Ahola and Aholabah, but you can understand who those women refer to. It refers to the birthright nations, those nations that have been blessed by God, and now we see curses beginning to set in. And Europe peeling away from U.S. influence. And it's not just Germany. There's another story here from Deutsche Welle about the French president, Emmanuel Macron. He said yesterday that, look, we've got to prepare to go forward without U.S. influence. Europe can no longer rely on the United States for its security, Macron said yesterday. And so you had the meeting between Macron and Donald Trump not that long ago, a few months ago, it seems like, maybe longer, when everything seemed like it was just hunky-dory, it was going great. But they get back home and you look at the reality of the situation. You look at what President Trump said over the summer when he visited Europe. And European leaders, I mean, they see the handwriting on the wall. President Trump, as you know, he's threatened to reduce U.S. commitment to NATO. And so these NATO member states, they're looking at each other saying, we've got to go it alone, and we've got to start building up our security, our defenses. We've got to start building new alliances. We've got to start looking for new trade partners. Well, and then you zoom out from that and you look at this world. I saw one comment on a story yesterday following the shooting in, Florida, that gaming, whatever it was, a video game place. And this guy came in and he killed two people. And someone in the comments said something like, what a sick world. And the response to him was, what do you mean, world? It's the United States that's sick. Well, the United States has its sickness for sure. But the rest of this world, I mean, this is a world. That's not just one nation. This is a world in darkness. The sickness runs through and through. It is worldwide. And you look at all these stories, most of these just from the last few days, about how that this world's becoming more dangerous. It's becoming an armed camp. European nations taking a second look at conscription? Why? Why are they considering these policies? Well, the Wall Street Journal says after the Cold War, most European countries suspended mandatory military service, but now they're rediscovering the institution that added muscle to the armed forces and some measure of social cohesion. I mean, we've got to do it for the nation. We've got to do it to bring us together. And we've got to muscle up militarily. So Germany's considering whether to bring it back. Sweden's already done it. Same with Lithuania. Norway expanded its conscription to include women. In France, it's under consideration. These are European nations, Western nations, prosperous nations, that see this world becoming more and more dangerous. And it's not just Europe. The Financial Times, again, over the weekend. Battle stations, reads the headline, Asia's arms race heats up. That's from the Financial Times. This story talks about just the huge increase in military spending in Asia. Do you think there's nations that are concerned about where this world is headed? This article says, we live in a more unsettled region than we have in several decades. That's quoting the, the defense minister of Australia. Even Australia's building up its arms, its military. The journal says, fear and uncertainty caused by China's rapidly increasing economic, military, and strategic might has been a key driving force behind the region's renewed interest in the recent military buildup. That's quoting someone from this from a think tank. The scale and the momentum risks a new and destabilizing arms race. That's what we're seeing. A new and destabilizing arms race. And you see it all across the Asia Pacific. Defense spending in the region, it's doubled since the year 2000. Doubled! In just 18 years, it's at something like $450 billion a year now. The Financial Times says the extra spending reflects an upswing in the global economy, instability in Eastern Europe and Asia Pacific, and the election of Mr. Trump. Well, there he is again. He's the bad guy. Not just among Democrats. He's the bad guy for so many nations. They don't like what he's saying about trade. They don't like what he's saying about NATO. Well, in a lot of cases, they just don't like what he says, period. I mean, look at the way he's covered. in the United States alone. Look at the way CNN treats this president, or MSNBC, or the New York Times, or the Washington Post. I mean, they're just going on nonstop. 7, 8, 10 lies a day. You can't trust what he says. You can't believe anything he says. Japan's building its military. The Japanese prime minister is pushing to revise the nation's pacifist constitution. We've talked about that before on this program and on the Trumpet Hour. South Korea is wondering if it should build up its own nuclear deterrent. Well, I mean, when you consider what the United States did with Ukraine, leaving them high and dry, you can see why the South Koreans would be wondering, maybe we should get a nuke. India. This is the Financial Times. India approves a $6 billion military spend as Asian arms race escalates. Everyone's doing it. We've written about this before at the Trumpet. I mean, this is not new to you, for so many of you listeners. But look, it's this, and then it's also all of these nations looking for new alliances. And listen to this quote. The diplomatic uncertainty has also forced a rethink of traditional alliance structures in the region. This is talking about Asia, Southeast Asia, the Pacific and such. But here are the traditional alliances, the structures that were in place for decades. They're being rearranged. They're being redrawn. These alliances that go back to even World War II. And then it quotes this, again, another expert. We're seeing a move away from the traditional defense alliances in Asia, whereby countries used to rely on one-on-one partnerships with the United States. See, all of these nations, they're preparing, they're planning for the post-American world. We've arrived at the post-American world. And so in Europe, in Asia, they're establishing new alliances. They're building up their militaries. They're undermining U.S. influence around the world. I talked about that with you yesterday. I mean, this is all so significant from a prophetic standpoint. I mean, what is the world, this world, going to look like just 2 or 3 years from now? Considering the trajectory we're on, what will this world look like? What about your nation, wherever it is you live? What will it be like in just a few short years? You can see just how important and how urgent this work of God really and truly is. When we come back, we'll comment on that recent Trumpet brief by Joel Hilliker and the love that so many millennials have in the United States for socialism, of all things. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet Magazine.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is The Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
In his Trumpet brief last week, Joel Hilliker talked about the comment that Andrew Cuomo, the New York governor, that disgraceful remark that he made about America. America was never really that great, he said. And I mean, even I don't know much about the audience he was speaking from. I presume they were supporters of his left-wing policies, of his left-wing ideology, and even that crowd was shocked to hear him say something like that. America was never that great. Well, over at Investors Business Daily, well, maybe before I get into that, I should just play you this little montage put together. I think this was at the Daily Caller. It's just about a minute of it. I think I mentioned it last week. But following that remark by Governor Cuomo, they took to the streets to interview university students. These are young people in the United States, seeing what they happen to think of Governor Cuomo's statement. Here's clip two.
Governor Cuomo came out here in New York at an event and said that the slogan Make America Great Again is flawed because it implies that America was great at some point. So we've been asking people their take. Do you think America has ever been truly great?
I don't believe America has been great for all folks ever, even today.
I would have to agree with Governor Cuomo.
Can you point to a time, or do you think there was a time when America was great?
I mean, not particularly.
The idea that there was a once great America is, you know, pointing towards this false sense of nationalism that, you know, what he's talking about, white America, you know, it's not great.
I think it has been great for straight white men for a very long time.
Do you think that there is a time you can point to where America was great?
I don't know, honestly.
So, I mean, there was a lot of outrage and criticism aimed at Governor Cuomo following his remarks, but certainly not on campus. They agreed with him. Young people agree with him. This is what they've been taught. They've been taught that America, that its founding principles, capitalism, all these things, they're evil through and through. And what we want, what we need is socialism. We need something new. They think socialism's new. This Investor's Business Daily editorial about the love for socialism among millennials. It says America's heavy flirtation with socialism continues, and nowhere is that more evident than in America's youth. For many millennials, socialism appears to be both a viable and desirable replacement for capitalism. It isn't on any level. It's not. It's not a viable replacement. But so many young people see this as the solution to all of America's problems. This is the way we bring utopia from sea to shining sea. IBD says America's older generations have no one to blame but themselves. They delivered their children and grandchildren into the hands of unionized public schools run by leftist administrators with their dumbed-down, biased curricula. They sat them in front of TVs and computer screens without paying attention to the nonstop message of civilizational self-loathing they imbibed from the mainstream media. And so, should we be surprised by the comments you heard on that little montage? Look at what they're learning. Look at what their professors are teaching them. As Mr. Hilliker brings out in his trumpet brief, I mean, this wasn't some kind of careless misstatement. I know Mr. Cuomo rather walked it back ever so slightly, but this is what they really and truly believe, these radical leftists. They believe that America is bad through and through, that the whole system needs to be brought down, and that it needs to be replaced with this socialist utopia. Especially young people. Well, IBD says here, far from learning the truth that America has been the greatest force for freedom in the history of humankind while creating unparalleled wealth for its citizens, students today are relentlessly drilled with a progressive catechism of guilt over America's long-admitted shortcomings in history. No one's ever said America's perfect. But over and over again, for all of them to conclude that America's never been great, well, that doesn't certainly square with the scriptures. And that was brought out in that trumpet brief last week. We'll conclude with that in a moment here. But it says the result, a generation raised on moral equivalency, diversity, and a jaundiced view of their nation's own past, a generation of Americans that hate their own culture, even as hundreds of millions around the world dream of coming to this land of opportunity and freedom. I mean, if just look at how many people want to get into the United States. What does that tell you about the capitalist system? What does that tell you about America's greatness or lack thereof? Why would, if it's as bad as so many of these students say it is, why are people clamoring to get in? Why are people risking their lives to get in? It says here, is it any surprise that the millennial generation sees socialism as an answer to all the world's shortcomings? After all, its utopian ideals of total equality and no want are appealing to young people. But then it says further on, we ask this because millennials today seem to be disgusted with a country that provides them with more opportunities than any country in history. See, where is their appreciation for these many blessings and benefits? What about their thanks and praise? How grateful are our young people? Mr. Hilliker, just to give you the exact quote of what I paraphrased earlier, he says, what Governor Cuomo said was not just a clumsy misstatement, it encapsulated a core conviction of leftist Americans. Many politicians, professors, teachers, and reporters sincerely believe America was never that great. This is a serious error that's sabotaging what greatness America still possesses. I mean, that's what he assures us of this in the Bible. If we're not thankful, if we don't acknowledge him, if we don't give him thanks, Romans 1, then he'll just take away those blessings. And that's what we see happening. This Investor's Business Daily, it goes on and talks about the horrific track record of socialism over the past century. The Soviet Union, Venezuela, Cuba, Nicaragua, Zimbabwe, North Korea. Did those socialist empires, did they bring equality and a higher standard of living and more freedom to their people? IBD says, as awful as Nazism was, and it was horrific by any standard, the various regimes of the extreme left in the 20th century were more murderous, if not more hateful. I mean, it's hard to say there was something more hateful than that Nazi machine. How do you even compare? It says, what's the greatest threat? This is something you can read about in America Under Attack and Great Again. This last thought. What is the greatest threat today to freedom and the U.S. way of life? It's not Nazism. It's socialism. It's communism. It's Marxism. All variants of the same disease. To the extent we embrace any of these false ideologies, we will suffer. Well, we're already suffering in so many ways because we have embraced them. So many of our young people have. Virtually half of the United States, they're committed to this. They're committed to this new socialist way. They think it's new. There's a column in the New York Times just the other day, I think it was last week, the new socialists talking about the rise of Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Her Democratic Socialist Party, it's the largest socialist organization in the States, and it's the fastest growing. Young people love it. Well, I was going to go through a little bit of that New York Times piece, but I can just set that aside for another time. But listen to what God says in Genesis 12. And again, I can't go back and give you a lot of the background. in the United States and Britain in prophecy. But here in Genesis 12, you know the exchange between God and Abraham. And God said, look, if you leave your country, if you leave your kindred, your family, your father's house, and if you go into a land that I will show you, if you're willing to follow me obediently and in faith, then I will make you, Abraham, I'll make you a great nation. That's in Genesis 12, and that applies to our nations. If you know anything about the United States and Britain in prophecy, you know that. God promised that he would, in fact, make America great. Same with the British Empire. You can see those promises more specifically in Genesis 48, where they're conferred upon Ephraim and Manasseh. America, descended from Manasseh, shall be great. And America was great. Who can deny that? Except these students coming through the university campuses of today. Because of the teaching, because of this left-wing conspiracy, that's what it is. Mr. Hilliker said in his trumpet brief, this was last week, he said, America has been the single greatest nation in history by virtually every measure, geographical advantages, natural resources, unprecedented wealth, industrial capacity, technological innovation, political strength, military might. It has been undeniably great in terms of individual liberty, social equality, economic opportunity, international generosity, and many other factors. God gave America the most unique founding in thousands of years and provided the moral infrastructure necessary to acquire and sustain national greatness. That is the truth. And what a shame that more young people aren't taught that in the United States. As Mr. Hilliker brought out in his trumpet brief, we had our freshman reception just 2 weeks ago in Edmond, there at headquarters. 25 new freshmen coming from around the world. I don't remember how many nations were represented, but for a small little group, 25 freshmen, well, it had to be something like 4, 5, maybe 6 nations. But we had one who comes from Zimbabwe. He's 20 years old. His name is Rufaro. And he arrived just a few days before the orientation. And every freshman has to get up. This is tradition at the college, and say a little bit about themselves, where they come from, what their goals are for their college career at Armstrong College, and anything else that comes to mind. And this is Rufaro, age 20, from Zimbabwe. This is what he had to say at our freshman orientation. Clip one.
Coming here to the United States for the first time in my life, I've just seen firsthand the fulfillment of God's promise to Abraham. And the United States is just the most blessed nation in the world ever. And seeing that, especially from where I come from, it's had a really big impact on me.
That's our one of our newest students from Zimbabwe. As Mr. Hilliker said in his trumpet brief, this newcomer to America, his first time in America, he said, this newcomer to America and others I have met over the years refreshingly states the obvious facts right under our noses that many Americans have forgotten or never knew. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, don't forget to send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.